Welcome to Flying the Coop. We are Anna and Janelle of Strange Birds, a worker-owned co-op. We believe the structure of how you build something determines what it can grow into.
Flying the Coop is for the people in the rooms where big things get built and who love thinking more deeply about how that work happens. Today, we are interviewing the fine folks at Emma Technology Cooperative, a worker-owned creative technology co-op based in New York City. Emma builds software and hardware for clients in video games, theater, public installation, and media arts. They have tackled theme park installations, programming languages built from scratch, politically challenging web art, a nonprofit arcade collective, and more game design than you can shake a joystick at. 5 years into it, this crew's got some super interesting and practical approaches to the big questions, like how to pay people fairly when the market doesn't, how to make decisions when everyone has an equal vote, and how to build something small on purpose to make it last.
Hi, Emma. Interestingly, none of you are actually named Emma. Would you mind introducing yourselves and in a sentence or two what you do at Emma?
My name is Glenn. I'm one of the founding members with Ramsey and Andy. We all write software. We all write slightly different software. I tend to be a little more focused on like hardware and installations and that kind of work. Not that they don't do it, but that's, I think, the thing I do the most of. And yeah, the theme park was me, I guess. That's a good description of which part of Emma I am.
I'm Andy Wallace, creative coder and game designer at Emma. Yeah, it's funny to think about what do we each do at Emma, because we all do a bit of everything. I'm probably the gamiest member of Emma in terms of the stuff I work on. I'm a part of that arcade nonprofit you mentioned earlier.
I'm Ramsey, another one of the founding members of Emma. Also run the co-op equally with Gwen and Andy. We all did the unglamorous work of bookkeeping, accounting, co-op administration, and I also write software. And yeah, I guess in that laundry list of all the things that Emma does, the programming languages, that's me, among other things.
I'm smiling big at this because it sounds like you all function a lot how we function over here at Strange Birds. So let's go back. I think it's been 5 years since you became a co-op. What made you decide to go down that route? Because especially in the United States, that's not a common choice.
It's a pain in the ass. I think this was originally Ramsey's sort of, I think he was the initiator of this project, but we all came out of freelancing and wanted something a little better than freelancing. And I think that's eventually led us to the decision of starting a co-op. I'll let Ramsey and Andy speak to it too.
Yeah, I had been freelancing for almost a decade, and I know all of us had a similar kind of work where you're basically engaged with a client for a period of time to turn around a project, and then you move on to the next client. And I think for me, like, that kind of work is ideal. Like, I love contracting. I love the high turnover of projects. I love getting to meet new people and new clients. And I just wanted a version of that with, like, none of the downsides. That's what led me to the co-op. The loneliness of being a solitary freelancer sucked, and I wanted a crew, basically. The financials are pretty, like, wrecked. You're either making money or losing money as a freelancer, and I wanted to be in a situation where I could be in between gigs and still making money somehow. And those are all the sort of practical considerations, but yeah, I reached a point just looking around and the way the world and the economy is, and I think we all have a similar feeling that we don't want like a boss, but we also don't want to be anyone else's boss, and that those are like, that's actually the same idea. And the way to get everything that we want is to like really double down on that.
Yeah, I think Ramsey really nailed it, but having that sense of community, having that sense of making freelance a little bit more predictable as opposed to just like boom and bust. And then, yeah, I wanted to be in a company where I didn't hate my boss.
We've had so many of these same conversations before. I think when I was at the point of potentially hopping on Strange Birds, we were still in that maybe I will, maybe I won't phase. I remember you, Anna, mentioning that you wanted to join forces with somebody, but you didn't want to ever manage somebody. And that really struck home with me because the one time I was forced into managing people, oh God, is that a mess? I'm sure there are people who are great at it, love it, vibe with it. That's not me. And I guess it's not you. And it's maybe not anyone who is present. Yeah, so I feel you on that. So I'm I'm very curious because your structure is super intentional, and right now you are three, but in the like call that we had prior to this conversation, you mentioned that you'd cap probably around eight. Can you tell me about being very intentional about that kind of size? What does that mean for how you want to exist in the world as a business?
Yeah, I think the number one thing about that is it's very important to us in terms of our decision-making structure to reach consensus. So we don't vote on things and then just say, oh, you got outvoted, so this is what we're doing. We sit down and talk about the actions we're going to do, and that doesn't mean everyone's 100% agrees all the time, but that there is a consensus reached. There's just a hard limit on that. Like, you can't do that with 200 people, and we don't want to.
That's our model too. I don't know what consensus model you use, but we use very Quaker style consensus. And I found that while we were working on building our operating agreement, the pure consensus model is also not common in co-ops. It's usually one person, one vote. So with the size cap and with the consensus model, can you talk a little bit more about how decisions are made and work within Emma?
Yeah, it's funny that you say Quaker style consensus. Like, we've talked to other people who have a modified consensus, and there's these like really formal sort of structures. I don't know that we have I couldn't tell you what sort of school of thought our consensus comes from. We mostly just talk it out and respect each other and hold space for each other, and are really committed, I think, to modifying a proposal to meet other people's needs rather than pushing anything through. So yeah, I think we are very deliberate about consensus, but yeah, I don't know that we have a sort of a theory of consensus that we enact beyond just like doing our best.
Yeah. I think, and the other thing is that like, we just keep working on it until we do find something that makes everybody at least tolerate it. And usually that ends up leading to the best decision. Like, just going through that process of, nope, we got to find something everybody's okay with. And eventually, once you find that, yeah, that ends up being the right thing to do, like the obviously correct thing. Like in hindsight, it's like, obviously, that was what we needed to do the whole time. We just had to find it. But again, like this sort of loose, we're just going to talk about it and work on it till we find it. You can't do that with 200 people. That's going to fall apart in like 4 seconds. So, you know, I think there's just not a willingness to try and do that gymnastics. Like, it's the thing everybody wants to like, gotcha. It's what happens if there's 100 people? It's, I don't know. That's not what I'm doing. Like, I am, in fact, unobligated to run a 200-person business. No one can make me.
Yeah, and one of our founding members, so we were four at founding and three currently. One of our founding members departed, I think, 2 years ago on good terms for personal reasons. And his name's Ivan Safran. He's an amazing game developer and graphics programmer. He actually pushed us he insisted on consensus, which I really appreciate. Because, yeah, coming in, I had, in my mind, I'm like, oh, it's the one person, one vote, majority wins. And he said a few things about consensus that have really stayed with me. One is that his experience was like having lived in communal housing, like not quite squats, but like him and a bunch of friends would like move into a mansion in like somewhere in Brooklyn and live together and cook for each other and split rent. Those houses were all managed by consensus. And they were, I think the biggest one was 27 people. And his take on it was that consensus produces the highest quality decisions at the lowest velocity, which I, as an engineer, I really appreciate framing it as a trade-off. And there are situations where you need to produce decisions at a velocity that necessitates making lower quality decisions, so you don't do consensus. So strictly, you have to be a real computer scientist about it. Given 200 people, the highest quality decision would probably be to consult every single one of them and to like factor everything in. And that'll maybe take 2 years, right? So if you don't have that much time, you do delegation or you do like majority voting. You do other things that are going to produce decisions that are not as high quality, but like in a time frame that is like more realistic. So yeah, Emma is very, we're very committed to like our kind of consensus, and we don't want to scale such that we would have to change. Because there are other models that can work for a 200-person co-op. And for that, there are co-ops of thousands of people that like function fine, but they don't function by consensus. So that trade-off is something I think that we're really like mindful of.
I'm sitting here listening to you all speak. I'm like, are we just like, we do messaging and UX, and you all do development, but we're like actually the same people.
I also just really appreciate putting it in terms of asking, what's your metric? What are you optimizing for? And then depending on what system you're in, what kind of result are you going to get optimizing for that? It depends what you're measuring, right? And if you're measuring quality of result, which maybe you ought to be, if you're building intentionally and not just speed, but don't mistake motion for progress, all that. I'm absolutely going to steal your framing because it's a way of, when I bring up the way that we do consensus-based decision making, I get a lot of blank stares sometimes, and from people who just think faster is automatically better, and how do you even do anything at all if you all have to agree on it? And the answer is you go slower. It's true. Yeah, you go slower and you're right. And that's not a defect, at least not for us.
And you don't even need to look too there have been anarchist societies that have been governed like this, but you don't need to go too far into like radical politics to find this kind of decision making. The IETF, which is a technical body that produces basically like protocols and like technical recommendations. I'm pretty sure it's the IETF. They make decisions by consensus, and they're not like a radical left. They're just like, no, this produces high quality decisions. Like, it's just not another way to do it. And they're playing on a much harder mode than we are, where we're like three people who like trust each other. The IT, like, this is a board of engineers that are like drifting in and drifting out and have different levels of commitment and different levels of engagement with the subject matter.
So work for direct competitors. There are engineers from both Google and Microsoft on this board, right? And they're not actually on the same side, but.
No, and it's rough consensus. And they're like, they have a declaration of it that like, it does border on no gods, no masters. They're like, we don't believe in presidents or kings or something like that. I'm like, yeah, okay. You don't have to wave the flag, but you're doing the thing. That's dope. But yeah, there's a sense of this kind of like way of organizing is both, I think we think more moral and more ethical, but also just more practical and just more like effective.
Yeah.
And yeah. Holler.
There's a lot of instances of this too outside of business. Yeah. Like it gets blank stares sometimes. You're like, oh, this is how we run a company. But like when people go out with their friends, they don't usually like vote on the restaurant. Like you talk to people and figure out like what works.
Unless you have that one friend that's, no, this is where we're going. This is it.
I was going to say the CEO of the friend group is then you have a...
Yeah.
Okay, so another aspect that I know sometimes draws blank stares that also Strange Birds and Emma share is that we compensate everybody equally. Can you walk me through your particular compensation model? Because it has some very cool details that I know that Anna is going to geek out over.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm so excited. I'm in.
Yeah, so our compensation model is basically we all get a flat salary. There's, in fact, a minimum salary in the state of New York for officers of the company. So we all get pretty much the minimum salary we can. And then we are additionally paid a percentage of every invoice we clear. So if I do work for a client, I get X percentage of that invoice on top of my completely regular salary, right? So you always have a minimum amount of money. And if you need more, or you happen to be working a lot more, you get more, right? So there's a bottom, and then if you need more, if you really want to like work and make more money, it's plausible, whether you want to do that or not. I don't think any of the three of us are like, let's make all the money we can kind of people. I think we're all willing to like trade money for time a little bit, but that is an option, right? And it means that when a member happens to be working a lot more, they also get compensated a little extra to balance it out. And when a member is not working, they're not like instantly unemployed, running like... It solves the thing Ramsey was talking about. You're either running out of money or you're making money and you're never in between. And this means that you could be in between. There's a buffer between those two things. And the co-op, like in the US being taxed as a co-op, there's like advantages. So we issue that, like, we call it a commission. It's like for tax purposes, it's not a commission. We tend to pay it out as a patronage dividend, specifically a per unit retain, which is like really detail-y tax stuff. Yeah, and we can get into the details of the tax stuff, which we're obviously not experts on, but it is what we're doing.
Gwen, you and I just need to talk offline about all of this. Janelle's right. I'm like, oh, tell me more. So a base salary, and then on projects that you are part of that get invoiced, you get a percentage of the invoice. So let's say all three of you work on the same project. All three of you would get some of that percentage of invoice. And at the invoice, for people who are like, taxes, patronage, what's this? Gwen, please correct me if I'm wrong. This is going to be my terrible summary of what patronage refunds are. So in a co-op, instead of, if you're in a partnership, you might get paid out dividends, right? That's a specific type of profit sharing that is taxed in a very specific way. In co-ops, it's called patronage refunds. And it's a very tax advantage to get patronage refunds versus dividends. I'm not going to go into why, because frankly, I can't remember all the details, but it's good. So I like how you are thinking about the percentage of invoice. I'm trying not to get too in the weeds, Janelle. I promise. I'm just so nerding out. We just did all of this. We just converted into a co-op like 2 weeks ago. So,
oh, wow. Congrats.
And my job was the, yeah, my job was the like tax bit of it. Yeah. It just brain melting.
Yeah, it's me the and Ramsey at the co-op.
Yeah, I really recommend getting into a co-op with some compiler nerds who want to like dive into tax code. It's made my life way easier.
It's a weird rule.
That's what we're missing. That's our next hire.
It's a fun puzzle.
There we go. And I think that one of the sub reasons of why I like doing work as a co-op is because it's unusual. There's no necessary playbooks out there, especially for the type of work that we do, where it's usually freelance or agency. And you have to get really creative and you have to dig into that. And I find that people who use, I would say, typical business models just do what's always been done and they don't necessarily dig into the details and think about, wait, there's a better way to do this work. I'm going to stop talking now. I could go, oh.
Yeah.
Ramsey and Gwen, can we just hang out and talk about tax code?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have opinions. Some of them are good. Some of them are useful. A lot of experiences one way or the other.
Our tax people are like, yeah, our clients have a lot of creative ideas about how equity should work.
Yeah, but to your point about being creative, even within like cooperative spaces, so much of patronage, as it's generally understood and talked about, it's like end of year profit sharing. And we wanted something where we could pay members like on the go throughout the year, and we didn't have to wait till the end of the year to get the extra money that you're entitled to. Yeah, going out and doing that research and working with good lawyers and working with good like tax people is, yeah, there's no blueprint, right? And everyone's going to do it a little differently and find their own way.
I think our journey, we thought a lot about like, what does it mean to be a member? We approach what quote full-time means differently because we didn't want it to be 40 hours a week because neither of us want to work 40 hours a week. So how do we define full time? How do we define what is active? We did a lot in that realm, but patronage refund is, I think, maybe a spot that we could get a little bit more creative with after we get through year one. We're going to get through year one.
Yeah, our year one taxes were rough. They were brutal.
Yeah, year one. We don't talk about year one.
But on that note, to talk about it a little bit, we've been around for 5 years, and I think our compensation policy has been updated 4 or 5 times. Yeah. It is definitely the kind of thing that as we've gone along further, we've both found what makes sense from a tax perspective, as well as like, how are we best serving our members? So it's not like we just came out of the gate and we're like, oh, we figured it out. This is the right formula. And we actually have published some on our blog of like different versions of our compensation policy, trying to show how that has evolved over time.
We're still updating it. We were just talking about 2 admittedly minor tweaks to our policy, but we're still updating it.
That's one of the nice things about how we operate is we can look at what we're doing and say, okay, is this serving us best? And if it's not, we can change it.
Are we missing stuff? Do we need more?
In a lot of conversations we have with people who are starting co-ops, people are really interested in the specifics of what we do. And we totally hear that. Concrete details are like so helpful. And the concrete details of other co-ops were like super helpful for us when we were getting off the ground. But the bottom line is like everything is downstream of your like worker democracy. And as long as it is a healthy democratic workplace, you will actively make decisions over time to reflect your needs and course correct and find whatever it is that you all need to take care of each other. So that really is more important than any of the financial details or any of those gymnastics. Just make sure that you have a good decision-making process.
You remind me of something that our lawyer, Jacqueline, which is a person that we share between us and Emma, by the way, who's amazing, and is episode 4. Go check it out. You remind me of something Jacqueline said as we were drawing up our own documents, that she prefers for people to have been walking the walk for some time to figure out how they want to be a co-op before writing it into the bylaws. A co-op should reflect the people who are inside it, and people are wonderfully complex and messy, and we are always figuring out the ways in which we want to show up, the ways in which we want to exist. And it takes time to do that. The other person I'm going to quote is Anna, who, when I joined Strange Birds, just fresh off of the corporate path, they reminded me that everything is going to go slower than I think. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm fast. You're fast. Let's do things quickly. We'll just figure it out quick and then go. No, that's really not how it happens. Things take time to emerge, and it takes time to test anything out to understand if it's the right container. And your edge cases, your error cases are not all going to come up all at once. So stress testing takes time. Seeing if something is the right fit for you takes time. So you can't just copy paste what somebody else did, unfortunately. But that does mean that you'll make something eventually cut out to fit yourselves.
Perfect. Precision. Yeah, I've also, I don't know, I had a very similar experience. Like, I had to, like, emotionally accept the fact, like, no, businesses move so slow. It's like, you send an email and you're lucky if they answer in a month. And it's like, oh, that's just fine. It's not like when you're one person in a business, it's like, your manager wants you to answer now, like, right now. When you're a business, no one cares. They're like, oh, I don't know, get to it this tax year, whatever. And it's, even if you don't, it's like, they might send a mean letter. They're like, you didn't do this thing you said you were going to do. What's up with that? There's so, all the like bureaucracy and everything is so much slower for businesses. I think probably just because rather than being a single person who can make a decision, a business is always a collection of people who have to make a decision, even if it's not all of them. I had to like let go of the anxiety of, I have to do this now. No, you don't. It's fine. Get it this quarter. Get it this year. It'll be fine. You could always like retroactively fix it. There's so many just ways to slow down the business that like, yeah, the government doesn't care. Your insurer does not care. Like, it's fine. Just take it easy. It's hard to get through that, especially if you come from like freelance world where it's like, no, there's a deadline. Get it done.
Yeah. And in a sense, particularly in America, corporate persons have more rights than human beings, and which is a kind of barbarism. But as a co-op, we all get to take advantage of that. Like, we're all now a collective corporate person and subject to all the like privileges and the much, much gentler treatment, I think, by the authorities and by the state. And yeah, I don't think the sort of master's tools can fully unmake the master's house, but there's like elements of that, right? There's, I think, giving like cooperative people the sort of levers is net good.
I've said this quite a few times in interviews, so I'll try not to repeat myself too much. But one of the reasons why we approached this cooperatively and we wanted to be a co-op is exactly that, where this is one way to break something down and to get people to ask questions and questions that they might not be used to asking. Not like, ooh, how much money do you make? But like, how do you compensate each other? That's a very different question than how much money do you make? And I think that's actually the more important question. That's more about the people in the business rather than the business itself. What you said, Ramsey, of there's a certain barbarism where corporations have more rights than people. But this is a way to help create that conversation and have it be, have it have the necessary nuance that it needs.
One of my notes from our pre-conversation is that you made it through a 10-month dry spell. Can you tell me more about that sounds like many things were probably put to a stress test.
So if you read on co-ops, there's no shortage of studies that show, I think the number is 29%, that they are 29% more likely to survive an economic downturn than a capitalist business. Like, I knew that at least going in. I'm like, oh, this is a resilient, among other things, a resilient way of organizing. Didn't love running the experiment, though. It is true, we made it because we're a co-op, but yep, that really sucked. I think the sort of background is, so this sort of, I think, connects or meshes well with some earlier points about the need to change over time and to hold capacity to change over time. Beyond whatever decisions you're making as a co-op amongst each other, you are still like engaged with a market that is inside of an economy, that is inside of a country, and there are these forces that are outside of your control that you are subject to, independent of your own decisions. We had a really good first year. We managed to land some like lucrative contracts as a kind of an opening move. The collapse of the tech market caught up with us, basically, and kind of like stratus of mid-sized companies that would normally hire people like us were just going bankrupt left and center, just closing and shuttering. And so that the dry spell was an entirely an external thing. And we just would pitch projects. There were very few kind of opportunities available, and we'd pitch them and they all bounced or fell through for one reason or another. And yeah, that's like where we found ourselves, right? It's how we got there. I don't know if Gwen or Andy want to tell the story of like how we got ourselves out of it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the long and short of it is, yep, our salaries got compressed. We did not make as much money. We did not get our commissions. We had to like essentially suspend giving ourselves our commission for a while. Like we had just a couple of years with no patronage dividends at all. But the business isn't dead, right? And so that's like, we are all willing to make that to like, not quite lend the business money, but lend the business our work and our time to keep it afloat so that when the market comes back, because it so far always has, we at least, yeah, fingers crossed, when it comes back, we will be ready and we'll actually be stronger. And that has been the case, actually. The last year or two has been quite busy, right? We're actually making good money, everything's stable, and we're pondering, like, is this the moment to add a fourth person? Part of our intuition around how many people we want is that one freelancer maybe has a 60% chance of being employed on any given day, but four freelancers have a 99% chance that at least a couple of them are employed. Like that, those statistics work in your favor. And so when the money is good, it's a good time to add a little more, and then you can shrink those highs and those dips a little bit every time. But yeah, the long and short of it is, yeah, we got underpaid for a little bit, and then we caught ourselves back up as we could within the bounds of laws and taxes and all of that. There are rules around what you can and cannot do there, but
we were underpaid for a while because it was a project we all believed in and we wanted to see it through. We did record during that time the commissions that people should have been getting. On our books, there was a debt to the individual members from the co-op, which did get resolved eventually, but it was certainly an act of trust on all our parts that we were going to get to the part where we could resolve it.
Yeah, and that I think is like operationally, like co-ops aren't more resilient because they're like magic, right? Because they're fundamentally democratic projects, you can all agree to take certain maneuvers that are just impossible in a hierarchical business. So yeah, we suspended commissions, we suspended salaries for a couple of pay cycles and recorded that as a debt that the co-op eventually resolved, like Andy said. And we did that because Emma is ours and we want it to keep existing and we want to keep doing it. If I was like an employee at a studio and the boss told me like, hey, I'm going to stop paying you for 2 months, but I'll record it on the books and pay you back in a year. I told them to fuck off and die. There's no way. Like, in what world? Because it's not my... It's almost... Trust is a word, but I feel like my relationship to someone who is, like, legitimately my boss, that would, like, involve an amount of trust. But the maneuvers that we did at Emma, there's trust in the economy would, like, swing back. But within Emma, like, I obviously trust Andy and Gwen with my life, but, like, I have agency. Like, I am an owner of this company. I have a full voice in this organization and can consent to certain maneuvers and oppose others. So yeah, they're resilient because you have access to tactics and strategies that are just off the table otherwise, if you're not organized this way.
So the members of a co-op actually get the benefit of doing these gambles and these sacrifices. Whereas if it's, I'm not going to risk my salary for the shareholders, I don't care. But when I am the shareholders, and I know that the other two shareholders are my good friends, Ramsey and Andy, it's like, all right, yeah, let's take that risk. Let's make it work. You're actually motivated to take the risk. Whereas if you're just an employee in a business, like, why would I do that? This doesn't get me anything. And it doesn't even get anybody I actually care about anything, right? There's no justification to do it in a sort of capitalist-oriented business.
Yeah, it wasn't 10 months, but we had a pretty severe, I think, 3-month dry spell over last summer. There was a moment after month two, because summers are usually slow for us. Nobody wants to do things. No one wants to think strategy and marketing in the summer. They want to go on vacation. Fine. We expected a slow, but we didn't expect like a drought. And by month two, I was starting to like, you know, be like, it's okay, it'll come back. And I'm like, do I believe that? But we were both like, okay, no, the important thing is that we're going to keep showing up and we're going to keep showing up and we're going to keep showing up because we believe in this and we want this and we know it's going to swing back around. And I think that resiliency is such a gift. And I know, Ramsey, you said co-ops aren't magic, but I disagree.
Yeah, I maybe overcompensate for like how, as a person, I am like breathlessly committed to the project of the destruction of capitalism and anarchy. And so I try and couch like all of my sort of senses. These are actually are practical and like tactical. There's like boring reasons to be doing all this stuff. But yeah, I'm like actively radicalized and energized every single day working at Emma. And it is a deep, good kind of magic for sure.
Yeah, you got to pick your audience.
Friends
and family members who are like, but equity, money. And I'm like, here's why. And then my like radical like activists and organizers, I'm like, I'm in a co-op. And they're like,
Anna, you've reminded me of a question that my dad always has. Dad, if you listen to this podcast, hi. He always asks what our long-term plan is, by which he means, how are you going to grow? But for the people in this room, I don't think that's how we're thinking about long-term, is it? The word that comes more to mind for me is sustainability and how I can keep doing work in a way that makes sense for me and as a container for my life, such that I can keep that going for as long as I want to be doing it.
The way you phrase it is exactly how we're approaching it. We are not interested in infinite growth. We want to be able to do the work that feels good for us, to be able to live comfortably and have time to make art. That's the goal.
Yeah, this is like, we're there as far as I'm concerned. If I can do this kind of work or take psychic damage from AI shit every day too. Everyone loves telling me that a robot's going to take my job every day. And there's a real sadness, honestly, that I experience like watching a lot of software people like very excited about turning the craft of software development to email, basically just like writing like text into a box and hoping you get the right thing out of it. And part of what I find depressing about that is I'm actually not trying to write less software. I love the work that I do. I like, deeply love it. And I just want to keep doing this. And until they put me in the ground, that is the long-term plan. And you had asked us in the email something that I've been thinking about over the past week, which is, yeah, like, how do you think about sustainability versus growth? And I think something that I said earlier, which is the like thinking about like beyond just the morality and the ethics of like anti-capitalist organizing, what are the like practicalities of it? I think something that the many sort of shortcomings of capitalism, it really collapses all like activity into a single verb, a single operation, which is profit. And profit is not everyone gets compensated, right? Profit is not like people who do the work get paid. Profit is money has turned into more money, strictly. If you're breaking even, you're not doing the thing. And so under capitalism, that's all you can do, right? The system cannot actually express anything else. And if you can find a way to encode whatever it is that you as a human being want to do in terms of profitable activity, then capitalism can support it. And in the Venn diagram of like useful and interesting activities and profitable activities, there's some overlap, sure, but there's a huge world that is just inexpressible, right? There's stuff you can't express as profitable activity that are still interesting and useful. And I think when it comes to sustainability and being able to like navigate the future and like uncertainties and like things that are going to come up down the pike, I think a lot of the like, you just need more verbs. I think a lot of the stuff you might need to do is outside of that overlap. And we can do that because we're a co-op, because of access to verbs like delay, defer, these other things. And when you take infinite growth off the table, this entire world of possibilities opens up. And of that world, yeah, we're trying to just keep our lights on as long as possible and keep doing the work we love doing.
I'm going to print that out in like this poster that I can see from my desk. That was glorious, Ramsey. Oh my God.
The whole speech, the whole monologue, like print the whole thing out. It's like, this is our new manifesto. That was so
really
good. Damn.
Yeah.
I'm like fired up right now.
I know. If people would like to find out more about Emma Cooperative and what y'all are all about, where should they go?
Say emma.coop. That's the one. There's everything all there. We don't do that much social media. None of us are super social media people. But yeah, emma.coop, we're working on updating our blog. We have a blog that tells people about what the heck we're doing. which is frequently the one people want to see. It's okay, what are you doing? But yeah, that would be the good one. We have a Mastodon. That's our only social media. We don't keep it up that much, but it's there.
We have friends that run a bakery co-op called Sea and Soil in the city, and their social media is just good and beautiful. And there's also Cup Dragon. This is like video game co-op. They're just a bunch of like really young game designers. Their social media is so good. So I'm always like, oh shit. All we have are like text files and like NDA shit that we can't post. So yeah, our social media is not the best, but yeah, the website is definitely a good place to go. And shoot us an email. We're always happy to like talk to people over email and meet and hang out if people are in the city.
Perfect. So I saved the most important question for last. How come you're called Emma if none of you are named Emma?
This is, I think, Ramsey's suggestion. We decided by consensus, you'll be shocked to know. It's after Emma Gold, an anarchist operating in New York City. Good person to name a business after.
Might be an acronym for everybody making money in art, but it's still, the jury's out on that one. But yeah, definitely Emma Goldman, who's an amazing, read everything she's ever written. She's just an amazing orator and theorist. And one of the first people, I think, in the political left to say, hey, I think queer people are comrades. Someone had to be the first.
Had to be the first.
Yeah, it was her.
Man, if Emma ever makes merch, I want it. Like, big patch. I'm seeing it.
It's not a bad idea. Right? We've talked about jumpsuits, which would be really fun. I really want to roll up to the install. Like, sort of
we go on site with clients a lot, and it would be very funny to have them perform.
Oh my god.
Five is best.
Flying the Coop is brought to you by Strange Birds, a strategy to execution co-op for organizations doing complex, meaningful work. When the opportunity is obvious, but execution feels impossible, we turn big ideas into real progress. Find us at strangebirds.land.